Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. And we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we buy the Tottenham white.
And still Ricky Villa! What a fantastic run! He scored!
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know.
Hello, welcome to the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm Dan Kilpatrick. I'm with Tom Barkley again. It is deadline day and the day after a much needed 2-0 win at Brentford that stopped the rot for Tottenham in the Premier League and renewed optimism, I think it's fair to say, Tom, ahead of what feels like a really decisive week for the club. Certainly the biggest week in the club season, probably in Ange's tenure.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Feel like this Liverpool game is the biggest game of his tenure. But what a way to start it, really, with these two victories in a row. It felt like Elfsborg was really crucial to try and get through without having to be in the playoffs in the Europa League. And it was pretty convincing in the end and a lovely story with three academy products scoring their first goal to win the game. But then we've been talking about recently how we weren't really sure where Tottenham's next win in the league would come from. We were thinking, well, Southampton at home, but that was a little while away. Just the form was so poor. You really couldn't see it coming. And we probably didn't earmark Brentford away. We thought maybe a draw would be a pretty good result. So to win with a clean sheet and to be relatively comfortable in what was overall a bit of an ugly win was much needed in this circumstance. And it's amazing how quickly the narrative changes because, you know, opportunity knocks, obviously, with Liverpool and the Cups, but also all the players that have been injured. The cavalry is not far away. So suddenly everything's looking far more optimistic for Tottenham and Ange Postecoglou.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say we didn't expect that at Brentford yesterday. Jamie Carragher certainly didn't expect it. He said he'd be amazed if Spurs won. He thought they would concede at least three times, which does give you an idea of the form Spurs went into the game on the back of. It was really terrible. But I think, and just to say, we will touch on transfers at the end of this pod, but it's 9:30 a.m. on deadline day morning. So this is going to date pretty quickly, but we'll try and touch on that. We're going to do the game first. But I think the key thing was, as much as the 3 points and the victory itself, was the manner of the victory, right? We've been waiting for a kind of ugly win under Postecoglou. And just before we started recording, you pointed out that the second goal wasn't ugly. It was very Angeball. And I've only just seen it back. And it's an incredible sequence of passing that starts in midfield, goes all the way back to Kinski, and then goes all the way back to the top again. So that was a great move and a really nice piece of play. But generally, it was backs to the wall stuff. I thought all four defenders were excellent. Jed Spence came out and spoke to us afterwards with the clutching the Man of the Match award, which was richly deserved. I saw Maddison say on Twitter that he was by far the Man of the Match, and I think most people would agree with that. But then Gray and Ben Davis again, I thought were outstanding. Gray just so composed, always in the right place positionally. And Davis looking like a kind of 6'5" centre-half. You know, again, we spoke to him afterwards and you realise that he's not an especially tall guy, but he was getting his head on absolutely everything, I thought, against a really physical and tall Brentford side who, as much as any team in the Premier League, are just happy to chuck it into the box again and again and again. That's what they're good at. And that makes them really difficult to play against. But I thought Spurs stood up to it really well. And I think everyone just needed to feel like that kind of win was possible. And now it's kind of in the bag. And as you say, the cavalry aren't far away. I think I'm not going to say it's a turning point. I'm not going to say things are transformed. I think Spurs aren't out of the woods yet, but it does feel like that can be a result to really build on.
Yeah, I think it is a turning point in terms of arresting the slide in the league and relegation chatter being quelled. I think that's, you know, it's 10 points now. And let's be honest, the form surely will only get better from here. It can't get as bad as it has been before. And the teams below them don't seem to be really struggling. When Ipswich are losing at home to Southampton, that's when you know they're in trouble. So I don't think anyone really, as we said throughout this, thought Tottenham were going to actually get relegated. But the point was that, you know, they can't be complacent and think themselves too good to go down if the form didn't get sorted out. But I think that's the turning point in that sense. I mean, 37 crosses apparently they faced against Brentford, which sort of underlines statistically that kind of barrage of high balls that you're alluding to. And I mean, Davis, he's someone that when things aren't going very well, he's often the target of stick from fans. You know, almost like the embodiment of a lack of ambition. But that's not fair, because he's not first choice at this point, but he's been a great servant and he's just super experienced in the way he goes about things. So he knows his strengths by now. He knows his game really, really well, and he's got this calming presence which I thought really helped Archie Gray. Because talking about another player who gets stick, Dragosin's obviously out, and he quite frequently gets when things aren't going well, fans seem to be not too enamoured with him. But you sort of forget how young Radu Dragosin is. He's 22. It's not just the fact that he's 22. He hasn't actually had that much time in senior football. So that experience that Davis can bring to help Archie, who looked fantastic, and he was someone who actually got a bit of abuse yesterday from the Brentford fans, didn't they? He seemed to be unhappy with the fact that he obviously turned them down at the last minute to join Spurs. So he was booed pretty much every time he got on the ball. But I think that really helped. And then let's move finally on to Spence, because I think he's the biggest takeaway, or the most impressive player. As you say, richly deserved that Man of the Match award. And his coolness under pressure is quite rare. Like, whether it be defending sort of last ditch, or whether it be more to the point, you know, playing out from the back under pressure of Brian Mbeumo or Mohamed Salah or whoever it be, sort of closing him down, is something that it feels like you can't teach. He's just got that sort of composure that suggests to me he might actually have there isn't much of a ceiling to his ability to where he can go, because he's got the ability, the technical ability, but he doesn't and he's got that composure. As long as he sort of keeps his focus right, which has basically been the only thing that he's been criticised for previous in his career, then that could be absolutely crucial to where he goes.
Yeah, I thought Spence was outstanding. And worth noting as well, he made that goal line clearance just before the second goal, which was really crucial. I think Carvalho with the overhead kick and Spence in the right place. And again, just easy to forget he's playing out of position as well as Archie Gray. You know, he's a right back. I don't think he'd spent a huge amount of time at left back before December, really. And he just looks so at home in the Premier League. And as you said, so calm on the ball, and a really intriguing player, I think. I also want to just touch on Ben Davis again and say that I think he did have a bit of a bad rep among many fans, didn't he? Because he was involved in just so many of the dreadful results over the last 5 years. You know, he tended to be an understudy who would step in for kind of the humiliations in the Europa League and Conference League and those kind of matches. But he is, I think, someone who has improved under Postecoglou. I think even at times last season, I thought, has he been playing the wrong position all his career? Because he looked, I think, better than people were giving him credit for when he was filling it at centre-half. I think he's better on the ball than people give him credit for. He's not the quickest, but he's got a lot of the attributes you want to be a kind of Premier League central defender. And Archie Gray made the point of saying after the game that Davis had kind of talked him through the match kind of blow by blow. And I think he's bringing that leadership and he's bringing those qualities to the team. And I think he is someone who deserves a bit of respect on his name, Tom. So I'm glad we're giving it to him. We should touch on I suppose the first goal as well. They say that a team in a rut, you know, needs a goal to go in off someone's backside, and it almost did go in off Jenelt's backside, didn't it? Or certainly his back. The goalkeeper making his Premier League debut, making a bit of a hash of Son's corner. I wonder if Son was going for goal again. I'm not sure. It was certainly a great corner. And Spurs, yeah, benefiting from a bit of chaos in the box of set pieces rather than being on the receiving end of it, which was welcome.
Yeah, yeah, a nice sort of reversal of fortune on that front, seeing as you know, Tottenham have been derided, particularly with when Vicario's been in goal for that exact issue. Yeah, their Icelandic keeper, Mark Flecken, their number one, had a thigh problem. So I think it was his first start rather than his debut, but he looked a little bit flappy, didn't he? It felt like Tottenham sort of did pre-plan that. Great delivery from Son. Bissouma got in front of him, was causing problems, but I don't think it was anything illegal in the way he did it. There's a reason there was no free kick given, and if there had been, I'm sure Spurs would have been up in arms given what they've had to deal with at times with Vicario in particular. And then went in off Yana, and I think when it comes to this game, Spurs managed the game well, but they also it's not like they got lucky, it's just the kind of things that weren't going for them in the last few games did go for them here. A bit of good fortune. Everything sort of went their way a little bit. And you know, just what they needed, really. On Sonny, I would say I thought he was pretty good again. I mean, bear in mind, he's basically got two assists there. I wouldn't say he was sort of at his dynamic best, but it was more of a disciplined performance from all the players, really, wasn't it? Like, and he often was sort of tracking back. But I'd say that's four games in a row now where, in sort of different ways, he's been very influential, and it's good to see him sort of returning to form, I suppose, or returning to a sort of status of influence in games, where there have been far too many this season for such a key player, where he's, if not been anonymous, then just not affected games like we have come to expect from such a good player. And I think Postecoglou also deserves a bit of credit for the way he managed the team throughout in ensuring they didn't get too tired, because that's almost the big worry for Spurs this season, particularly when they're facing a team like Brentford who don't have Europe, of how they can sort of ensure they don't have those spells like we saw at the start of the Leicester game, where suddenly the game flips on its head, maybe through lack of concentration and or, you know, lack of sharpness because of being tired. And don't forget, he obviously lost Van de Ven before the game. He explained afterwards that the plan was, you know, initially to give him 45 minutes, but that having spoken to his coaches and then spoken to Mickey, he felt it was a better idea to give him a full week's worth of training ahead of Liverpool and keep him on ice. And he felt like Spence's pace coming back to the team against Mbeumo gave him that option. But, you know, whatever the way they sort of talk about it now, I do think originally the plan had been to play Van de Ven. So when you're missing a player like that, that is going to be a miss. And so he started with Mikey Moore out right, who looks a bit dead on his feet, to be honest, by the end of the Elfsborg game. Gave him a good 45 minutes. And then changed it up with Bergvall coming on, Kulusevski out wide. I just thought that the timing of some of the substitutions were geared towards ensuring that they didn't lose their focus or get too fatigued. And it worked well.
Yeah, agreed. And just a couple of thoughts from me on a couple of players. I mean, I thought Moore struggled with the physicality of Brentford. I mean, Brentford are a huge team. You can literally see from the press box at the G-Tech kind of how big they are. They are noticeably pretty towering. And I think he wasn't right for that game. And it made sense that Postecoglou brought him off at half-time. Obviously, we know he's going to be a huge talent and a phenomenal player and all the rest of it. But I do wonder if he has to bulk up a little bit to be really impactful in the Premier League. I almost feel like he could be a better option in Europe in the second half of the campaign, where it's less physical. And then Richarlison, I'm kind of interested in your thoughts on Richarlison, because I thought he had a pretty average game and looked a bit clunky. Didn't look totally fit or looked a bit rusty or jaded, but my God, he works hard. I mean, you could kind of see him going the extra mile, really. I mean, pressing everything, chugging away, and he's not as fit as Solanke, or he's not as fit as Solanke at the moment, so it doesn't look quite as natural when he's doing all that pressing and all that running, but he was certainly putting in a shift. And then I thought it was a good moment from a Spurs point of view when he took an absolute age to come off. a kind of canny bit of gamesmanship, which fed into the kind of ugly win narrative, I thought. You know, it wasn't just backs to the wall defending. It was time wasting. It was niggly fouls. It was Son getting booked, stopping the counter with a kind of cynical professional tackle. It was all those things that, you know, we sometimes wonder if Spurs don't do well enough, that the kind of dark arts, as it were, that we know that Newcastle and Arsenal and teams like that are very, very good at. You know, they were a bit more visible today, and Richarlison, I felt, kind of embodied that with his slow walk off and also with his kind of, you know, very physical approach from the front.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I'd like to know how much of that was a sort of instruction from the manager, because we know that Ange has told us publicly that he is not one for sort of dark arts whenever he's been asked about, you know, Ben White fiddling with Vicario's gloves or whatever it might be. I mean, maybe that's the kind of thing he's talking about because that's sort of exceptionally cheeky, I suppose. But as you say, it's not, you could say in isolation, Richarlison taking forever to go off and pretending he didn't hear his name being said on the loudspeaker could just be his decision. But, you know, Sonny with that kind of cynical foul on Mbeumo. I mean, you sort of add it all up together, you think, I wonder if maybe they have thought of it, to go about it in a slightly different way. And to be honest, even Bergvall the other day against Elfsborg, who turned 19 actually against Brentford, you know, was putting it about a bit to the point where Postecoglou was telling him to calm down. But I do wonder if generally Spurs are trying to show a slightly nastier side to themselves during this period, because maybe they have been too meek and mild, and that could be part of the issue that they've struggled in the last few months whilst they've been, you know, struggling for injuries. And just onto your point about Richarlison, I mean, I think we've all sort of concluded he's not been worth the money that they paid, because it was a massive fee, it was a record signing, mainly because of his injury. But I do think there are a couple of factors that we need to sort of factor in when assessing him. Firstly, he was following up Harry Kane, and whoever comes next, it's just, you're on hiding to nothing. I mean, I saw some sort of tweets yesterday, or one particular, talking about how you see Richarlison trying to hold the ball up, and you sort of long for Harry Kane. But Harry Kane is brilliant at that. Like, he's a special player that you'll never be able to replace in the same way. I mean, Solanke is obviously better than that, than Richarlison. But I just feel like it's a bit unfair to compare the two. And also, you know, I do feel like since he's been absent, he has been missed. I think he's played pretty well under Postecoglou generally. And if he's not scoring goals, which actually his goal record when he's been fit for Postecoglou is pretty good, as you say, he's putting himself about a lot. So he is offering a lot to the team. And I think he is, whilst he might not be the long-term solution, and I do feel like if Spurs got the right offer, they would have sold him in the summer, he is an asset, and we're only appreciating that, people are appreciating that more now that he's back after such a long time out.
One thing we can touch on, I think, is Postecoglou's slightly boosted options going into Liverpool. I mean, the cavalry aren't back yet. We're expecting almost unfortunate, well, it is very unfortunate, really, in timing-wise for Postecoglou and Spurs, that I think Maddison, Odegaard, possibly Vicario, who else am I missing? Johnson are all slated to be back. Werner after Villa. But I do think Spurs go into the Liverpool game with more options than they've had for most of the winter. At the back, Van de Ven, as you said, should be back in contention after Postecoglou decided not to risk him and keep him on ice against Brentford. Kevin Danso comes into the equation. He's available to play that game despite kind of confusion about whether he'd be eligible, having not been at Spurs for the first leg. And then in midfield, you know, that then frees up Gray to potentially move into midfield. And Postecoglou's looking at three from Gray, Bentancourt, Bergvall, Saar, Bissouma, and possibly Maddison, who I think is pushing to be fit for that game. The front three, there are fewer options, particularly if Kulusevski joins that midfield cohort and plays at number eight against Liverpool. But it's starting to feel a bit better, isn't it? I just kind of wondered your thoughts on, A, who you would play at centre-half. Would you throw Danso straight in, assuming Van de Ven starts? And B, kind of who would your midfield three be?
Well, I think it would be harsh to leave Ben Davis out, but it almost feels like part of his issue is if Van de Ven is fit, Van de Ven has to play. He's the left-sided centre-back. You don't really want to play it feels weird having the two of them. It's strange, isn't it? You're sort of quite used to having two right-footers in the middle, but suddenly the idea of two left-footers in the middle just seems like it wouldn't work. And I don't know why that is. But you'd imagine Spence would play. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was Gray and Van de Ven to start. It'd be a hell of a game to throw Danso in from the beginning. I'm unsure on that one. One left field shout actually is I'm wondering about Vicario. He does feel like he's been pushing for a while. Although having said that, Kinski I thought had a very good game against Brentford. It was his first clean sheet in the Premier League. Made a couple of very strong saves. So there's no reason. And bear in mind his debut was against Liverpool and how well he played in that game. I think it might all be harsh to leave him out. But Postecoglou has been at pains to talk about Vicario's influence in the dressing room as part of the leadership group. So maybe he's one to watch. And then midfield, I think Bergvall starts. The fact that he didn't start this game against Brentford. Madison, I would expect to be off the bench. And even with the way, I think even at full strength, to be honest, away to Liverpool, he'd probably use him more as a look to be more of an option off the bench, a joker, as the Germans would call it, someone to sort of change the game later on. So I would have thought Bissouma, Bentancur, and Bergvall. Although I guess I'm leaving Saar out, who came off the bench, although he's had a few niggles recently. Maybe between Saar and Bissouma, perhaps for that midfield three.
Yeah, I think your head's kind of as scrambled as mine. I would expect Danso to start. I've got to say, I think Ange will throw him in. I mean,
Danso.
Yeah, he's made the point very consistently that Gray is not a centre-half. Although he almost wrote back on that last night, I noticed. He said, who knows, when he was asked if Gray could end up at centre-half, which is a drum I've been banging for most of the winter, saying, why not? He looks very good there. But I think Ange's view is that he's not a defender and he'll try and move him away from that position as soon as he can. And I think having signed a centre-half, I think he'll put him in next to Van de Ven. I don't think it's quite as specialist a position as, say, the base of midfield or wide right or left, where it takes a while to get up to speed with Ange Ball. I think he could probably coach that into Danso in a couple of days, which is maintain a line, play out. So I expect him to start, but we'll see. And then I don't know on the midfield. I'm really intrigued. I love watching Bergvall. I think he brings a lot to the team. I think Ange, for that game, will want the experience and kind of cover and seniority of Bissouma and Bentancur if possible. And I think Kulusevski is really important as a number eight. And then I haven't even mentioned Saar. And as he said, Madison. So there are more options in there.
I'd be surprised if Gray was thrown in at holding midfield. It feels like a precious position. And at this stage, I mean, we should probably talk a bit about Danso, really. Obviously, Spurs have been... We're still waiting to find out about Radu Dragosin, but we got the sense it was going to be a serious injury as soon as they made quick moves to bring in a new centre-back. There was talk of Tomori, that didn't happen, but they've gone for Kevin Danso. Just on Dragosin, and after the game said it didn't look good and he was going to see a specialist. But let's be honest, we're sort of bracing ourselves, fearing the worst on that front. Also based on the fact that they seem to be going after another centre-back before the window closes. But Danso... So he's 26, Austrian international, signed on loan from RC Lens in France, where they're currently, I was looking at, they're sixth in the league, or they were last time I checked, but only 4 points off second. Him and Kusunov, who's signed for big money for Man City, have formed quite a pretty good partnership. He's, people might have seen his interview that he's given to Tottenham. I mean, he basically sounds English. He's born in Austria to Ghanaian parents, but moved to Milton Keynes age six. Was at Reading and MK Dons as a youngster before going to Augsburg. I remember him a little bit when he had a loan to Southampton in the 1920 season. He only played 10 games, his last game being ironically against Tottenham. He got remember getting sent off against Man United, and he was only, I think he was 20 at that time, and he looked very raw. And I presume he's developed massively since then. The way he describes himself and the way that Ange described him yesterday does sound like he's a really good fit, as long as he can go and like back it up with the way he plays. He talks about being quick, obviously, good on the ball, good in one-on-one situations. physical, powerful, kind of all the reason, all the things that I, in an Ange's ideal way of playing, is what you want from your centre backs. And what I do feel like Radu Dragosin, lack of pace and maybe the ability out passing out from the back, is slightly lacking. But also, I think one of the crucial factors behind Danzo's signing is that he wants to be here. When you listen, I mean, I guess whenever a player signs for a club and does their little interview afterwards, they're obviously going to sound optimistic and positive about it. But it did genuinely feel like he wanted to sign for the club. And Ange has been at pains to talk about how if he's giving the players the hard sell, they're probably not the right players for them. And we've seen that with Matias Tell, maybe Tomori, other players, Muani, this window. And sometimes it's worth, you know, taking a punt on a player that is so good that they're not convinced, but you manage to somehow get them through the door because of circumstances. I'm thinking, but often it doesn't work out. I mean, I think of like Michael Owen at Newcastle as a prime example. He didn't really ever want to be there and obviously got injured, but it wasn't worth it. It's better to go for players, whatever club you're at, about players you actually want to play for the club. And Danzo seems to fit that mould.
Yeah, I look forward to the Wolves fans gently booing him as the Brentford fans did Archie Gray on Sunday. Yeah, I think nothing more to add from me, really. Obviously, I think given that Spurs are pursuing another centre-half, they fear the worst on Dragosin. But as you said, he's seeing a specialist over his knee today, so we should find out a little bit more in the next few days. And I think it's fair to say, I think most Spurs fans are aware of it, that there is a question mark about Romero's long-term future. His contracts will have 2 years in the summer, and he's obviously been critical of the club this season, not played a huge amount. So I do wonder whether Spurs are contingency planning in the event that contract talks with him don't go anywhere. Let's touch on deadline day, but it is 10 a.m. on Monday, so things are going to change. This is going to date. But I mean, as we understand it, Tom, or certainly as I understand it, Spurs are in the market for another centre-half today. Postecoglou said at Brentford they're still a bit short in that area. I believe Mark Gaye is being considered and Spurs have tried. I don't think Crystal Palace want to sell him, so that's maybe one to keep an eye on over the course of the day. We're told Axel Disasi is not a target Spurs are actively pursuing. There was some speculation that he could come on loan from Chelsea. And then in terms of other names at the back, I don't have any, but as we know, Johan Lange likes to work in the shadows, so there may be some players a bit further down that list who are kind of not known yet. And then a forward as well, I think, is obviously on the list, and just spoken pretty much all of January about the need for more reinforcements up front and help for Solanke and help for Richarlison and all the rest of it. So I'm sure Spurs will try and get a forward through the door.
On Gehi specifically, he's someone that I think Spurs have been looking at for many years now. He's obviously developed massively at Crystal Palace, become a starter for England, was brilliant at the Euros. I guess we've got a new manager now in Thomas Tuchel, so we'll have to see, you know, what he chooses to do. But I imagine Gehi would probably still be a regular starter. He's someone that Newcastle tried to sign last summer, but didn't get a deal done. But he, at this point, his contract's up in the end of next year. So I reckon Gehi probably stays this window. I'd be surprised if he left at this point, but will probably move in the summer and there'll be a clutch of teams after him. I mean, Spurs will obviously hope. I would not be surprised if they were in for him then. But, you know, that's when maybe Liverpool, particularly if they've lost Van Dijk, we're still waiting to see what's happening on that front. And a bunch of other clubs will probably look to sign him because he'll be a cheaper fee than he would have been now or before. But I could see the logic, particularly if Romero were to move on behind him. And he'd be an excellent signing, wouldn't he, on that front. And then in the forward areas, yeah, I mean, we know they've tried to sign Muani, who Spurs fans will notice scored twice at the weekend and played really well for Juventus. They tried to sign Tell, that hasn't happened either. So it's obvious they've wanted a forward. But the funny thing is that when you actually look at the squad numbers and the returning players, it's not long until they've got a whole raft of attacking players back. I mean, the players you mentioned earlier were 7 to 10 days away just a few days ago. And then Solanke was only a week after that. So I wonder at this point whether they will go, well, you know, they're all coming back pretty soon, so maybe that doesn't happen. But as you say, it's 10 a.m. Loads going to happen. Maybe we should do something at the end of the window, by the end of the night, and there'll probably be a whole raft of names that will come out of nowhere, and maybe one of them will be signed.
Yeah, we will try and wrap up the window toward the end of today, if we get a message from the club saying you can go to bed now, we might be able to jump on a pod. If not, I will try and do something on Tuesday and look ahead probably to Liverpool as well. But in the meantime, Tom, thanks for joining, and everyone, thanks for listening. We will be back before the end of the week. Bye for now.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.